Hello and welcome back. It's great to have you back with us in the studio. We're going through chapter 6 of the Bhagavad Gita in the series entitled The Gita Decoded, and we're almost at the end of this chapter in which Sister Denise has been sharing her understanding and drawn from her 40 years of practice of Raja Yoga meditation to share with us what this means, what the various shlokas means, and how to put it into practice in one's daily life. So, Sister Denise, welcome back. It's great to have you.
Thank you.
I'm going to start with verse 22 because it grabbed my attention. Having attained this, in reference to the previous shlokas, no greater gain can he imagine established in this. He is not even moved by profound sorrow. Now, in this sloka, we've heard about the practice of solitude, the practice of meditation, focusing solely on God, becoming a saint. That was the term that was used. And now we find that the result of this is somebody who's not even moved by profound sorrow. This is a very attractive state to be in. But I want you to tell us how you get there.
Well, when you think about profound sorrow, if you hear about it, if you see it, it moves you. Mm. It does move you. You feel empathy, you feel sympathy, and you wish that it were not so.
Yes, and know? Sister Denise, you also experience something called secondary trauma.
That's there too. But so maybe that's an interesting point. If you say not moved even by profound sorrow, I would say definitely you would not experience secondary trauma. Mm. That your yoga would keep you free from that. So maybe this word moved refers to that, because I think that if we are cold and so neutral as to be uncaring in the face of profound sorrow, that would be not really spiritual. I think that God feels the intensity of the sorrows of people in the world who are experiencing and in the situation of profound sorrow, but God definitely doesn't have secondary trauma. So that means you have to have a lot of spiritual power to feel with, you know, there's a beautiful word, hamdardi, which means something like compassion and empathy, but that it doesn't trouble you.
I think a lot of us would like to achieve that state. But Sister Denise, for many, the fact that it troubles you is the reason you become compassionate. You see, if it didn't touch you, if the pain and sorrow that exists in this world didn't touch you, then a lot of people won't engage in the helping professions.
When there's a big bad accident on the road, everybody stops to look. Mm. Known as spectator slowing. Mm. So there's something in the human psyche that is a bit like a vulture, you know, enjoying other people's misery, which is not good at all. Mm. You know, there's other people who say, well, I'm not going to watch the news anymore because it's too awful. Mm. I can't take it. There's only a narrow band of the sorrow of the other people in this world or creatures in this world which touches you, and then after that you can't manage it. So I think that it does require a very expanded heart to be able to be there with, you know, and really have compassion for those who need that support. And I think that's really the service of a yogi, is to really be there and to be able to be there, to not run away from, because the word here is profound sorrow, not just a bit of sorrow. Mm. Profound sorrow. Mm. So if you can't handle profound sorrow, you're not useful. You have to be able to, you know what I mean?
Ouch. Yes, I do know what you mean.
So you've got to be pretty capable to bear another person's sorrow without getting just freaked out by it, or, as you said, secondary trauma. So I think that's an aspect of spiritual greatness, actually.
23 takes it further. Let this, the dissolution of union with pain. That is an extremely interesting line. The dissolution of union with pain, be known as yoga. This yoga is to be practiced with with determination and with an undismayed mind. The dissolution of union with pain. Are we, Sister Denise, enmeshed in pain? Do we enjoy our pain on some level? Do we attract it? Do we say, you know, a little bit of pain today. I want some of that. Okay. Do we like our pain in certain dosages? Do people look for pain?
Well, in the situation of domestic violence, definitely. You know, victims of domestic violence will say, unless I'm being beaten up, I don't feel anything. You know, that's...
Ouch.
Yeah, that's bad. Union with pain, a person's relationship with pain. I suppose the most well-known form of extreme pain is when a woman is giving birth to a child, and as soon as it's over, she forgets it and then is focused on nurturing the child. But beforehand, it's the most terrible thing. The pharmaceutical industry is involved in creating, you know, drugs for pain relief, and a lot of the illegal mind-altering drugs are for managing a person's physical, emotional, psychological pain, because they can't manage the down that is there, the depression, the all of these negative feelings, which are psychological pain. So I think our relationship with pain may be very ambivalent. We want it, we hate it, it's a love-hate relationship. The dissolution of union with pain can also mean something that yogis do practice, which is to disconnect from the body at a time when there is severe pain. And this then reduces the pain by a great deal. Some people, they have chronic pain. And in terms of pain management, sometimes people will actually engage in yogic practices for disconnecting from the body as a pain management method. Pain, also physical pain, when you embrace it, it shifts and it goes away. Mm. So there is something very deep about your relationship with pain and the whole question of the bodiless practice.
Why do so few of us even ask this question? I've yet to meet somebody other than you who speaks of, what is my relationship with pain? We tend to avoid pain. We tend to carry on with our lives as if there is no pain. We find different ways of ignoring the pain. Like, it could be anything from watching television to inflicting and you know, harmful behavior. Nobody has a relationship with pain. Nobody asks themselves this question. Why are we so afraid to go there? There's pain and there's our lives. And even if it's in your face, we want to push it away, and we do push it away.
We do. There was an article in the news media today which talked about pain, trauma, in terms of the very huge refugee crisis that is going on in Europe during these days. And this was very, very different from what you normally get. Here, I think for the first time, I saw in the news media a serious article saying, you know, we need to have a different relationship with pain. We need to be aware of the intensity of what happens to people who go through some of these war traumas, and we need to have a very different mentality about it. So I think that something has happened in the world today which has caused us to cross over a line which has made us have to think about pain differently. So I think it's very significant that this is coming up also at the same time. You know, sometimes people are so dismissive of somebody's pain. People are so unwilling to help, so unwilling to receive people who are fleeing very, very desperate situations and turning against them with great cruelty. The community of psychologists and so on are saying, you know, we have a problem here, we have an attitude problem. And I think this is also being taken up here in the Gita.
Sister Denise, I would now like to take you to Shloka 29, which reads as follows. He who is disciplined by yoga sees the self present in all beings, and all beings present in the self. He sees the same self at all times. Capital S is used more than once here as well. What does it mean to see the self present in all beings?
My take on this verse is the capital S is a reference to the concept of the omnipresence of God. It is reading like that, the idea of the self, big S, being there in everything. That to me is absolutely the idea of omnipresence. Brahma Kumaris, following our particular form of Raj Yoga that we practice, we definitely would say we see the soul in all people. We would also say, because here it doesn't say people, it says things, but things also to me include circumstances. So in all circumstances there is some gems of wisdom to be extracted. And gems of wisdom, of course, lie with God. And so if you're able to see the positive, the wisdom, the, you know, the silver lining in the cloud, even, you know, the reference to something higher in something that appears to be very, very terrible or very low, very ordinary, then it means that you're using your capacity to interpret things in such a way that what they seem to be by your perception is one thing, but how you take them is according to your spiritual understanding, which gives another layer of meaning to what you would get if you just saw it through sense perception.
Sure. Wow. Didn't expect your answer. This theme is continued, Sister Denise, on verse 32, which reads, he who sees equality in everything in the image of his own self, Arjuna, whether in pleasure or in pain, is thought to be a supreme yogin. He who sees equality in everything. In this context, how is it to be interpreted?
Well, I think there's several different types of equality being mentioned here. If you see equality in everything, you see everything is the same, is high, low, good, bad, it's all the same to you, which means that you have a bit of an vairagya attitude. Vairagya is like, it's not this, it's not it, you know. Vairagya means no, I'm not drawn to it, it's not a temptation, it's not real. It's a kind of a distaste. There's a certain empathy that is included in it, that, you know, there by the grace of God go I. Yeah, that could be me. So you're not inferior, superior. Things can happen to anyone. And so you're really practicing to see that, you know, good things, bad things, ultimately they all cancel each other out, and you end up with a sort of zero, a neutral place where you're neither pulled, attracted, nor repelled. It's again this idea of equanimity, detachment that we've seen in earlier parts of the Gita.
Sister Denise, I'm now going to jump a few shlokas and go to verse 40, which reads, "The Blessed Lord spoke, Arjuna, neither here on earth nor in heaven above is there found to be destruction of him. No one who does good goes to misfortune, my son." That is very affectionate, mm-hmm. Yeah, which is kind of sweet. "Neither here on earth nor in heaven above." Is there life in heaven above? Sister Denise?
I always think of heaven as an earthly place, but not the earth as we know it now. You know, even in the most paradisical places, there's plenty of mosquitoes to bite you. But
is there paradise too?
There is the idea of the lower state of the world and the higher state of the world. So, you know, for some people, life is hell. For other people, life is heaven. So there are concepts of heaven and hell coexisting. But it's very common to hear earth is down here and heaven is up there, and that when you die, you go to heaven or something like this. But any description of heaven is pretty terrestrial, but a lot nicer than what we normally get. So I see it as a time, a historical time on earth where everything is really perfected as compared with now. But what it also says, which I think is very interesting, is my son. Mm. Now, it was my friend a little earlier,
yes.
But the relationship is different now.
Yes.
This is the father and son. So it's really God the Father talking to his son and encouraging him, saying, look, even if you're doing good things and you're not getting a good result, don't worry, because any good action is going to lead to a good reward, but it may come later on. But don't imagine that the law of karma stops working just because it takes more time to come to fruition here.
That is a very profound lesson, because I think the law of karma is deeply misunderstood in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And very one-sided, which means that you and I will be doing an episode on the law of karma soon. The message then that God wants his son to know is continue with the good that you're doing.
Yes, just keep doing good and know that it will produce good. And even if everything looks really bad, don't pay attention to the appearances, but apply the laws and know the laws and know that they are irrevocable.
Mm. I see the question of rebirth comes into play here in future stanzas, where it is said that you will take these traits and the good that you do in your next birth, and it will determine that birth.
Well, yes. You see, this is a very important aspect of the philosophy of reincarnation, that you will take birth according to your karma. And so if your karma is good, even if your circumstances are not good, but your karma is good, you're not reacting to the circumstances or using circumstances as an excuse to be reactive, but you're just steadily doing the right thing no matter what, you will have a good birth. And so we have to start seeing ourselves in terms of a long, ancient, distant past and a very far forward moving future.
Sister Denise, I found verse 46 very thought provoking. It reads, "The yogin is superior to the ascetics. He is also thought to be superior to the learned, and the yogin is superior to those who perform ritual works. Therefore, be a yogin, Arjuna." So he's saying that God is saying that he is aware that his children engage in these practices of being an ascetic, studying, education, and also performing rituals. But he's then setting a hierarchy, isn't it, of sorts,
yes.
And said the one who is with me in his mind and having done whatever else is contained in the Bhagavad Gita. He is superior to all of them.
It also shows us that something going on at the level of the mind is much more real than the physical stuff.
Why do we believe otherwise? Why? And Sister Denise, it's not just we who act this way, where you believe actions, you know the expression, actions speaks louder than words.
Yes.
Actions speak louder than words and don't even acknowledge the existence of thoughts. Okay? So why are we like that? What has made us believe that actions are more important, and whereas what is advocated here is somebody sitting in solitude meditating on God is the highest way to be? And why is it also that we have a similar expectation from other people?
Well, in terms of the laws of karma, when you think something, it has less sort of physical impact than when you say something. You can say, oh, sorry, I didn't mean that. You think something, nobody really knows what you think. But if you do something, you know, that's it, you did it. So on the physical level, thoughts are ephemeral, words can be retracted, and deeds are a little bit, you know, you did it, we got you there. Now, as soon as you go to the level of spirit, thoughts become everything, because thought creates the atmosphere. And when you're a yogi, it's all about your intention, quality of being, all of this. And so in comparison with the level of your thinking and your relationship with God, rituals are like nothing. You know, so there's two opposing angles on what is impactful. You see, in the materialistic world, deeds are it.
Yeah.
In the spiritual world, thought is it.
Sister Denise, the list of topics that we should be covering is getting that much longer. I think we should do an entire episode on thoughts. But that's will fall under forthcoming attractions. So, Sister Denise, we've come to the end of chapter 6, and I want to read the last shloka to you, and I'd like your take on it. Of all these yogins, he who has merged his inner self in me, capital S, capital M, honors me, comma, full of faith, is thought to be the most devoted to me. So, he who is with God in the mind and in the intellect is praised and acknowledged by God as the one who is most devoted to me. What does it mean to merge your inner self in God?
You know, there's this idea of union with God or communion with God. So when you're in a very high stage of yoga, you can no longer feel your body. You can only experience the presence of God or being merged in God. You don't actually become God, but your experience is that there's an absolute fusion. And then after some time you come back again, so there isn't absolute fusion, but it's an experience of fusion. This is really the level on which God is operating, because God is discarnate. God doesn't have a body, or doesn't experience things via a sense perception, but everything is directly from the mind. And so the mind of God will know what's happening in the minds of people. So everything is happening on the level of the mind. And when people's minds are full of waste and negative and so on, the thought power is operating on a very low level. Once you purify your thinking so that you have no waste thoughts, no bad thoughts, only pure thoughts, and your mind is moving very slowly, you start to be able to operate mentally on a totally different dimension.
Sister Denise, that sounds attractive indeed. And you know what I'm sensing from you as you speak about this in the last 5 minutes? You're emanating a feeling of serenity, which is really so lovely. And I want to redirect it to you at home. I hope you're sensing the not just Sister Denise's words, but the space from which she's speaking. And it's obviously from experience. It's not, she's not theorizing, which is really so beautiful. Thank you. So there you have it. We've come to the end of chapter 6, the yoga of meditation. What does meditation mean according to the Bhagavad Gita? How does one practice solitude? What should one renounce, sacrifice? How do you focus on God? And the various rituals and practices we do, what is superior to that? It is said to be a yogin is superior to that. And God defines what it means to be devoted to Him. So very beautiful, very rich. And what touches me most about it is that it offers you so much. But if one is focused on the life that we lead, you know, our responsibilities, our family, friends, job, etc., then you won't have time for any of this. And this requires a lot of self-respect, but also attention and detail, because it won't happen by itself. But Sister Denise, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for giving us your half hour. And we hope to see you soon for chapter 7 and further discussions. Take care and goodbye.